When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 185 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sport Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. No goals, no points, bottom of the table. Everton Football Club. What a start to the season. Obviously, Goodison Park yesterday. Wolves are in town. We spoke about it last week. Certainly a game that we felt we should be getting something from and probably winning, given Wolves' troubles as well, given that they were on no points before the game. And it was very much, almost, in a way, a bit of an action replay of what we saw against Fulham, if not quite as dominant, but very, very similar in terms of the stats. And walking to Goodison Park yesterday afternoon, I couldn't quite believe that we didn't at least take something from the game. Very similar feeling to the Fulham game. A late goal cost us yet again. And you know, after these first three games and games that we all looked at before the start of the season and thought we can definitely pick up points in at least probably two of them, we haven't got anything. And that's obviously a major concern. But Pete, we were there, of course. They started really well. Got a couple of free sausage rolls from our friends over at the at Home Baked, didn't we? Which was nice, along with our usual pies. So we thought this is a good start of the day. Met up with the Blue Doodler, first time in person as well. Nice to see Andy as well. And thought, you know, this day started well. Team news comes out. Jared Branthwaite gets the nod. Lewis Dobbin gets the nod. And you felt, okay, a little bit of a buzz now. The usual suspects are not playing. But from there, Pete, and after witnessing what we witnessed, what went wrong?
I think you summarised it well. I was going down to the game feeling a bit deflated and not expecting too much, really. And like we discussed on the podcast last week, I was expecting it to be a tight, difficult, awful game to watch. And it certainly fulfilled those expectations. But when I saw the pre-match and the lineup came through, it started to generate a bit of hope, because I thought, well, look, he's clearly seeing the same things that the majority of Everton fans have from the last couple of games. You know, Branthwaite's come in, that looked like the right call. You know, Dobbin seemed to have earned his starting place on that left-hand side. You know, he's taken Mopé out. You know, Dan Juma definitely showed enough against Villa to demonstrate, you know, his quality and potential, and at the very least, how much better he is as an attacking threat than what we've got available at the moment. So you started to feel positive. You started to feel like, you know, okay, yeah, you know, I quite like that team. Probably wouldn't have picked it too differently. I think we look competitive. I think we can give Wolves problems. But, you know, in that first half, I think Wolves approached it exactly like we said last week, just trying to make the first half as boring and as slow as possible, and just get into half time being 0-0 and then go out and win the second half. And you wonder whether the players knew that script as well, because I thought when we came out second half, we looked nervous. I thought we were off the pace. And you just had this growing sense that, like, you know, we're giving them the game here. We're giving them the game. And we just allowed them, you know, far too much territory in the match. You know, we looked nervous. We became uncompetitive. We'll come on to it in a minute. But, there were certain, I don't like to focus on individual performances, but there were some terrible individual performances in that side. And, that's really worrying for me. And I don't like to single people out, but I think, sometimes after games like this, you have to. And I just thought Amadou Onana was completely invisible in that midfield. Absolutely invisible. And I don't know whether his head's out the door, whether he's angling for a move, whether he's not fit, whether he's injured, whether there are other things going on. You've got to be careful, haven't you, as a fan, because you don't have access to the full picture. But I felt his lack of presence and probably Garner being out on the right and us being a bit imbalanced left Idrissa Garner Gueye really isolated. And just time and time again, Wolves were able to run through us. I mean, we were talking before the game, and Lee rightly pointed out, I think at the point Wolves scored, it was only like the first or second shot on target. And really, we like the Fulham game, we had the momentum of the game. But I do think the Fulham game was different. I think the Fulham game, we looked a lot more in control, a lot more aggressive, a lot more decisive, and a lot more unlucky against Wolves. I think I came away worried. I think I came away worried because we looked completely inept to me in the second half. It was always going to be about the first goal, but I felt like we gave Wolves far too many chances, and you always felt like the momentum was with them. Like we said last week, you've got to be careful not to be catastrophic after only two or three games, but the way we got turned over against Villa and then just the lack of backbone, it comes back to that, backbone and balls. That's why we lost against Wolves for me. No, we didn't lose it because of tactics. Individual performances didn't help, but just collectively throughout the team, we weren't organised and difficult enough and professional enough. And after Wolves scored, Jose Sarr, who, typically had a world-class game, I think we made it easy for him, ran up to the halfway line and started, started pointing at his head, making kind of, like mentality gestures. And I felt really wound up because I thought he's absolutely right. And that's what Wolves have come here and done. They've come here, they've put all the pressure on us, they've sat back, and then, they've taken the chance when it's come to them. But that should have been us. Home team, Everton. There are some positives despite it being a difficult time. And I just felt we were weak, mentally weak. So there's a lot to unpick, I think.
Yeah, there's many things, isn't it, that you look at that went wrong or didn't go right is probably the best way to look at it. And instead of us looking at players who didn't play particularly well, because there was many of them, you look at, okay, what players offered something in the game? What positives were there? And there were a few. I mean, on another day, like Fulham, Everton win the game, no problem. There was big chances. I think we said on the way home last night, Pete, there was four big chances Everton had. Obviously, didn't score any. I think we've had eight across the first three games of the season, haven't scored a goal. So you've got to look at that and think, well, we're creating. 17 shots on goal, yesterday, seven on target. So we're creating. So is it the personnel aren't good enough to put the ball in the back of the net? That's what it suggests. We know the situation surrounding our injuries. We've got injuries to many, many key attacking players. Let's get that right first of all, which is a massive problem. That's what's causing the unbalance of the team, isn't it? When we're putting James Garner wide right, and we had a conversation in the ground before the game, and you thought, Pete, that I wasn't a fan of James Garner by how I speak, and that's not the case. What I want to see is James Garner playing central midfield. I don't want to see James Garner playing wide right. I don't want to see him playing right back. It's good to have players who can play in a variety of positions. But James Garner playing right wing just doesn't work. He wants to come inside. And that at times yesterday left Nathan Patterson a little bit exposed. And I thought Patterson had a good game. I thought he played well. And he's been caught out recently. And I've said, he's got a lot of development to do. But I think he got caught out yesterday incorrectly because I thought he played particularly well. I thought he had a decent game. But there's too many of the square pegs round hole situation with Everton at this moment in time. And when you're missing the likes of Calvert-Lewin, Iwobi, Coleman, Dwight McNeil, Jack Harrison, who we think is going to obviously make a real impact for us as well. You have this kind of situation where you haven't got the players in the side, you've got the ability to put the ball in the back of the net, because it's a game we should have won. Make no mistake about it. And we got to 85 minutes in, and the fella next to me said, I think they had quite a few players booked at that point. He said, oh, no one gets sent off, because it means that they are going to sit back and sign and get a point. And I thought, I'll take a point right now. Because in my head, I just knew how it was going to go. You know, if it is too open, Everton will concede. And obviously, that's exactly what happened. But Lee, what are your thoughts, obviously, post-match now, given we've had a bit of time to digest what happened yesterday? Are you seeing enough from that side? Now, like I said, we've got the injuries, of course. There's still time in the transfer window. We're going to discuss the striker, who's currently having his medical as we speak at this moment in time. But are you seeing enough from those two home games to suggest that at some point it will click?
Well, the numbers suggest that it should do, shouldn't it? Like you two have rightly pointed out, we've created more than enough chances in both games to be on 6 points right now instead of 9. And like you opened the podcast there, we're now on 0 points with no goals. That is unbelievable after 3 games. But like I said to you boys off air before, you know, there were signs in pre-season, weren't there? I know it's pre-season and fitness is more important than everything else. But at the same time, you know, we were playing much lesser opposition in pre-season. You know, I went to the Bolton game, you went to the Stoke game, Mike. And let's be honest, other than Onana scoring in the last kick of the game at Stoke, we haven't scored in those games either. You know what I mean? And then again, look, you know, caveat that with it is pre-season, but you know, that's the time to be getting a bit of confidence in the team, isn't it? You know, getting a few goals. That's the whole point of maybe, you know, having a slightly easier pre-season, if you like, rather than playing some of the bigger teams. And let's be honest, was it a penalty as well in the last game of the pre-season as well? It was, wasn't it? Against Lisbon. So, you know, again, so there's no goals from open play there either. So, Dice can't say that the writing wasn't on the wall. I think most fans would attest to the fact that we knew it was a friendly start and we were desperate just to get a forward in. You know, now obviously Beto looks like he's going to sign. As we're recording now, he's having his medical today, apparently, isn't he? So maybe announcement possibly today or tomorrow. But, you know, that's two out of the 3 games, certainly, we've potentially thrown away there without having a centre forward. Now, Dom was massively unlucky to have broken his cheekbone in a freak incident. Obviously, that's the way the dice is rolling for us at the minute. But, you know, he should have been in way earlier. If Beto was the target, which we're led to believe he was, obviously, I know we've been linked with a few others as well, we should have got it done. And, we, you know, that could have been the difference right now between, you know, no points that we're on and 6 points that could have been. There are areas in the team, like Pete alluded to there, where it worries me. Unfortunately, I wasn't at the game like you two. I was with my daughter away for a few days. But, you know, I saw enough in the bits that I saw as well. And certainly in the other 2 games, particularly the Villa game, we lack a natural 6 in midfield. You know, of the Gareth Barry mould, if you like. Garner, as we know, for me, his stats are phenomenal. He hasn't started the season his best. But, you know, at times last season, he was our best player. And but we all know with Garner, he loves to engage, doesn't he? He loves to chase the ball. That is almost Gattuso-esque like that. He sees the ball, he goes for it. And the goal comes from that, doesn't it? It's him giving the ball away in midfield with a sloppy sort of clearance. But instead of keeping his shape, he runs straight after it. And that empties the midfield. That, I don't know whether you boys watched Match of the Day last night. I watched it when I got back late last night. And Paulinho, Fulham, I don't know whether you saw his performance. It was his first game in the season. He's been out. He didn't play against us either. Against Arsenal was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. In terms of an out-and-out defensive mid, that is exactly, I think, what we need right now in terms of someone that just sits there and puts out fires. And that allows the others just to go on and play. It protects the back four. But that is a worry for me. It is a worry for me. It's a worry in the fact that it's, you know, like you were saying there before, Pete, we're almost too easy. We're too open. We're too vulnerable to the counter-attack. And that's one of my biggest concerns as well. Obviously, the lack of goals is the biggest concern, because obviously you don't win games unless you score goals. But against the better side that Villa showed there, the better side, certainly away from home, will just open us up. And that's something Dyche needs to look at that. He needs to get the balance of this midfield right. You mentioned about James Garner there. He's almost a victim of the Iwobi's here, isn't he? In the fact he's so honest. His work rate's, you know, very good, an asset to his game. So Dyche is almost like, well, you'll work hard, you'll cover your fullback, so I'll shove you on out on the right. Well, you know, again, square pegs, round holes. You know what I mean? So there's other things other than the goals, obviously, which is the main issue that needs addressing, because certainly away from home, like I said, it's going to be a problem where teams, you know, will have more of the ball and will create more chances. But as I said before, you know, not the only, but one of the positive lights is the fact we are creating. We just need that little bit of quality, and hopefully this new lad coming in now gives us that. But I just wanted to ask you two quickly anyway. I mean, there was a cameo, obviously, from the new Portuguese kid, Chimiti, coming in. I mean, some of the reports that I've seen showed that he had a bit of character, he had a bit of something about him. He was demanding the ball to his chest, seemed to have a decent touch. His movement seemed pretty good, apparently. Could you guys attest to that?
Yeah, I think he was exciting to watch, I've got to be honest. And, you know, we said this when he first signed. It's important not to put the pressure on this kid, because we're certain, and we've been certain for a striker for 2 years. You know, he's 19 years of age. He's played a handful of games in men's football, as I'd call it. And he's certainly one for the future on a 4-year deal. But he, out of the blue, he was named on the bench after Sean Dyche's press conference, when he was asked by the fellow from the BBC if he knows when Youssef Chimiti will be available. And he says yes. And he says, can you tell us? And he says no. And that was literally about that. So you thought, well, it's going to be probably post-international break here, because there was rumours he had a bit of a niggle, to be honest with you. But great to see him on the bench. Watched him in the warm-up, quite a big lad, a lot of growing to do. You know, he's tall, but he's fairly lean. But he came on, put himself about, no problem. The physical side of the game, it didn't seem to concern him. As you say, he wanted the ball to feet, to chest. For the goal that Decore scored that was disallowed for offside, that was, you know, wafer thin. Lovely bit of link-up play there, heavily involved in that. He stays pretty central. As I say, he didn't mind putting his body in, putting his foot in. He got booked, I think, for putting someone over the hoardings at one point. I think that was a 1-0 down. So promising early days, of course. Now, what I'd probably say is that we'll probably see him midweek against Doncaster, I would have thought. Might get the start, maybe. So it'll be exciting to see what he can do. But I just think that, you know, on a day where you come away from the ground, you know, pretty upset to lose another game at home. Everton have lost 5 of the last 6 home games, which is horrendous. You know, there were a couple of things that you can look at and say, okay, well, there are a couple of positives. But what are your thoughts on Chimiti, Pete? Because obviously you saw him as I saw him. Did you like what you saw? Because I thought personally his link-up play was decent, and he can certainly handle himself as well.
Same, I did. I thought he had a really positive performance, and hopefully we will be able to see a lot more of him very, very soon, because, you know, he's still settling in, building up his fitness, no doubt. But yeah, I thought he involved himself. He didn't go missing. He looked competitive. He wanted to get on the ball. His positional sense looked good. Like you say, he had an involvement in the goal that was disallowed. So yeah, hopefully the future's bright, and it is a positive to take away. But I think it links in with the conversation we're having about, I think, square pegs, round holes, James Garner. It's balance, isn't it? And I think that's what we're still lacking at the moment, and that's what we were lacking for, you know, so much of the previous 2 seasons. You're not looking at a starting 11 with, you know, with balance on the flanks, and, you know, someone in the kind of striker position that is able to fulfill the role and play the style of football we need them to play. So, yeah, hopefully Chimiti is the start of us being a more balanced side.
On another front, I thought Dan Juma didn't play too badly. again, he's obviously gaining his fitness as well. The lad clearly has technical ability, doesn't he? We can see that. He showed it in flashes. I think he'll only get better as he gets fitter. I think we can also see he clearly will be better off the left as well rather than through the middle. I watched that chance again he had. I mean, he was a very similar chance he had in the Fulham game where he went through and he's obviously opened his body up to bend it. And it's, again, another save from Sarr hit the post, didn't it? But when I watched the highlights again last night, they seemed to indicate on VAR that it potentially could have been onside that. So obviously, look, you know, it's ifs and buts because obviously the keeper saved it. But again, that's a big chance again, isn't it? It's 1v1. It's another big chance. And the longer this goes on, the more it's going to play in the players' minds as well, isn't it? Because, you know, it's even going to get to the stage where if we have a penalty, can you imagine if we miss a penalty? You know what I mean? It's just almost going to be an ongoing joke. So the pressure just needs to be alleviated straight away. And now this cup game probably couldn't come at a better time. You know what I mean? In that respect, I think it's a chance for us to try and get a few goals and for Dyche to, you know, almost just go. I would just go stronger team as possible. I would potentially start Chimiti as well. And if we get the Beto deal over the line, maybe have him on the bench with a chance to come on for 20 minutes just to give him a bit of a run out. You know what I mean? And have a look at him. But it's a chance for us to try and maybe score, you know, potentially two or three or four. I know obviously Sky are going there hoping for an upset. But we should be going there going, you know what, lads, we've had two home games here and, you know, okay, we were poor against Villa, but other than that, you know, we've created enough. Let's try and get a few goals here before we go into the Sheffield United game. And then if we win that game in the week, suddenly the outlook looks a little bit more rosy for the Sheffield United game in terms of confidence in front of goal.
It's certainly, you know, the game of midweek is certainly an opportunity to give players minutes and make a few changes. You want to be careful, of course, because Everton want to win the game. You want to try and get a win because any kind of win is vital to just turning things around a little bit, you know, turning negatives into positives and have the players believing that they could score first and foremost. So it will be an opportunity to see other players get, you know, get a little bit more time. Like you say, Chimiti, probably the main one there. You know, the likes of Lewis Dobbin obviously got a start yesterday. Did fairly well, I thought. Difficult, obviously, when you're so young, when you're coming in to a situation where Everton aren't, you know, got no points, haven't played particularly well. Well, didn't play well in the last game, but did okay. So some of the younger players will get time, but we've got to be careful not to make a whole raft of changes is what I'd say. But just before we sort of look at the week ahead, just to sort of round off the Wolves game, the goal itself for Wolves was a real disappointment, wasn't it? You know, in terms of the type of goal that it was, the cross that was allowed to come in, and it was from Neto from our left hand side, and they brought on an absolutely huge centre forward, but he didn't even have to leave the ground to score the goal. What looking at that, Pete, without trying to apportion blame, let's apportion blame. Whose fault was that? Because, you know, first of all, to say the cross gets allowed to come in, but how on earth have we allowed him to actually get his head on the ball when we've got, obviously, Jordan Pickford didn't come out of his line, and obviously a couple of defenders around him as well. It was a poor goal to concede that, wasn't it?
It was, and when it went in, initially, I didn't think the striker got anything on it because, like you say, you didn't see a jump or, you know, any competition with the centre half. I think he was up against Tarkowski, wasn't he? So I thought initially, well, that's just somehow flashed in. It must be, you know, some kind of freak goal because Pickford didn't move either, did he? He was more or less stationary. But I think when you see it back, it's, I wouldn't even say it's a calamity of errors, but I think number one, it's just far too easy to run through us. You know, so easy to run through us. You know, how far have they come with the ball on the right-hand side before they've got time to look up, have a sip of tea and whip a ball in? And that's, you know, I'm fed up with the sound of my own voice because how many times do we say on the podcast, how many times have I said, that's why you get wound up as a football fan? This is why you get really annoyed because, you know, what you get told at grassroots football and, you know, the basic ABCs of football stop the cross, make it difficult for your man, you know, goalkeeper take charge. And I think the fans were right to be angry yesterday. You, up the other end of the pitch, you've got Jose Sarr, who just looked calm, composed, excellent positioning, plucked every single cross at, you know, out of the air. And yeah, I think maybe we did make it a bit easy for him. But I thought Pickford struggled a bit yesterday, and there was a warning sign, wasn't there, with a goal that was disallowed, that where arguably his positioning comes into question. And I think you've got to ask the same thing for the goal. And it's, again, I'm trying not to be too catastrophic about it, but it's worrying. It's worrying when you concede goals like that, because what it suggests is that there are fundamental things that are going wrong, that they might be simple, but I think sometimes they can be quite difficult to put right, or it's not a good sign that you concede in a goal like that. And you know, that's the infuriating thing. It mixes into the layers of us not taking our chances, not making the most of the periods of dominance that we had. We should have won the game, but we didn't. And the reason we didn't is because of ourselves, not because of Wolves.
I think Pickford showed two sides to his game there in that game. He made an outrageous save with reactions, which is what he's known for. I think that's one of his best assets of his game, is his reaction speed is phenomenal, isn't it? And, you know, he made an outstanding save from a set piece. And then, like you said there, Pete, in the same breath there, you know, a top goalkeeper, he's not known for being commanded in the air, let's be fair. His stature doesn't allow him to be that either, really. He's not the tallest of goalkeepers. But, you know, most goalkeepers there would be coming out and you know, clattering the ball, clattering the player afterwards, wouldn't they? Do you know what I mean? And, or at least making it known so that the centre-forward was like, I don't want to get absolutely poleaxed here. And it's a soft goal, like you said. I mean, we all know Pedro Neto's a real talent. I know he didn't have his best of games yesterday, although he always carries a threat. He was outstanding against Man United the other day. He's been out for a very long time with an ACL injury, but we all know, anyone who knows football knows he's predominantly left-footed, isn't he? So, like I said before, when Garner gives it away and then he tries to rectify his mistake, runs after the ball like a dog running after a tennis ball, he runs, you know, and then the ball gets fed out wide to Neto. Just show him on his right foot, allowing him to lift his head. If you watch it, the centre-forward has got his hand in the air going like that. He has time to look up and put a crossing on his favourite foot. I think it's Dan Juma and Young out there, isn't it? That, you know, there's two against one as well. So, you know, it's almost as if the players are like, well, you know what, we've given it everything today, but we'll take a nil. No, they're not going to do anything outrageous and score a goal at this stage. You know, letting someone of that quality whip a ball into your box, you know, with a, like you said, Mike, you know, a basketball guy in the middle of the box. You know, anything can happen. And you saw it because Branthwaite, who, by the way, was a positive yesterday. I thought Branthwaite looked really composed, started a bit nervously, didn't he? But other than that, he, you know, he's everything Michael Keane, isn't he, on the ball? Like we said, it opens up the angles with his left foot. He can improve in certain areas. We know that probably needs to be a little bit more commanded in the air. But overall, let's be honest, you know, he's definitely better than Michael Keane. And he's got attracted to the runner that's made the run down the channel. If you look at Tarkowski, he's asked Patterson, hasn't he, almost anticipating the cross just to cover him, as if to say, look, coming in on the cover here. And then, yeah, I think, so first of all, they're at fault for letting the cross in. Then I think Tarkowski's got to be aware where his man is. He's peeled off the back of him. And last minute, Patterson's left his man to try and obviously put a challenge in to put him off. And let's be honest, it's a bit of a fluke, isn't it? Because it comes off his back. You know what I mean? He just gets anything on it and it goes in. And you're just sitting there going, how on earth's that gone in? But you know, the way our luck is at the minute, I mean, it's obviously gone in the back of the net. That's the type of goal we need right now, isn't it? Almost off someone's backside and going in. That's basically what it was. And then obviously you're thinking, oh, I don't. So there's a catalogue of errors there. And if Dyche is going to be doing that review, he's going to be pinpointing those three things. And you know, Pickford's almost behind the line, isn't it? When the ball's going in, he's retreating into his own goal mouth, basically. So yeah, you asked Mike, you know, whose fault was it? I think there's a catalogue of errors there that would have prevented the goal. And in the end, you know, you take the point all day instead of that. Well, of course you would. But yeah, I just wanted to ask quickly as well, guys. I mean, with Dyche at the minute, obviously he's done well to keep us up. Is there a distinct style of play under Dyche at the minute? Would you say, are we trying to play out from the back? Are we doing our thing of just being safe and knocking it around midfield, going backwards, then giving it to Pickford, who launches it, and then we lose the ball? You know what I mean? Is there a distinct style of play at the minute under Dyche?
I think that's a brilliant question, because for me, Lee, no, and I think that's part of the worry. You know, I don't want to suggest, like, I feel like every game we play, we should be able to set out and perform the way we did in that initial Arsenal game. But I do think, in a weird way, that's the kind of the template, the blueprint, because that performance had everything. It had a clear tactical style, a clear team shape. We were organised. We were hard to beat. We were aggressive. We were clinical. You knew what you were looking at. You know, there was a philosophy of focus, and I don't know whether it goes back to, you know, big theme of the podcast today has been square pegs, round holes, imbalance. Are we not able to play that way because of the personnel we've got? And he's just trying to be as pragmatic as he can. Or, you know, is for some reason the philosophy just not coming through on the pitch. But watching Everton play so far this season, I don't know what I'm looking at. The only thing we seem to have retained, and I think this is why one reason why we're so open, is he likes us to be very, very compact without the ball. And I think fans sometimes get frustrated because the way we tend to set out defensively is we move left and right across the pitch depending where the ball is. So often what happens is a wide player will hug the byline, and there'll be masses of distance between, you know, Young if the ball's on our right, or Patson if the ball's on our left. And you can hear the shouts. You know, people want players to be closer to the man. But when that ball gets switched, I think initially when Dyche came in, we were very, very good at staying compact and moving right across with the play. But now there seems to just be this chasm between the back four, who are still moving and still organised in that way, and the midfield, where there just seems to be so much space, and it makes us so open. And I, whether it's big chances missed by other teams on stats, or expected goals, or I think sometimes that figure is lower than the opportunities you see when you watch the game, because you see how much the potential there is for a top side just to completely cleave us apart. And I think in a way that's maybe what happened against Aston Villa. I just think we're too easy to play against. And, you know, maybe that's something we need to kind of look at over the next few weeks as we do get players fit again and we do have more balance in the side. Do we start to see, you know, more of a clear philosophy on the pitch? I don't know what you think, Mike, but for me, it doesn't seem to be there at the moment, and it worries me.
I think we massively lack energy at various times in the game. You know, there was a couple of moments yesterday, second half. I thought we started the second half pretty flat. Started the first half okay, second half was pretty flat, and it took a block slide tackle by Lewis Dobbin to get the crowd up, to get the players going, and then I think quite quickly after, Decore then flies in, doesn't he, when the centre half and Kilman added in, and Decore flew in, blocked the ball, and I think we won a free kick on the back of that. And there's not enough of those moments. Players aren't leading in terms of setting the intensity, and that's what you think, and that's what we saw a lot of the times under Dyche, especially at Goodison last season, was that playing with that intensity, and it's just not there. There's too many moments in the game where Everton are too slow to either release the ball, to get a shot off. So at the times when you need to, you know, make a quick decision and do something and you know, keep the ball moving quickly, Everton slow it down. And at times when you have got a little bit of time, we rush it. So it's again, that comes down to decision making. But there's a lot of that sort of, there's nobody sort of leading the players for me. There's a bit of a lack of leadership all over the park. Obviously, you've got James Tarkowski as captain currently at centre-half. You've got Ashley Young, who's been brought in, you know, in terms of having that experience and leadership. I think he's been poor the last couple of weeks, to be honest with you. I think we need some more personalities and people who are going to take games by the scruff of the neck and try and drag players along with them. But there is a lack of intensity, whether because the situation last season dictated that the players had to play a certain way and he had to put it all on the line to keep us in the league. And now they're sort of playing within themselves and doing safe things. I don't know. But there are concerns there. We've mentioned, obviously, the injuries that we've got, which doesn't help, of course. That's what brings about this unbalance to the side. So when players started to trickle back post-international break, when we finalise the squad with new transfers, we expect sort of two, maybe three players to come in. Then maybe we'll see a better effort. Maybe then we'll see us at least score a goal, which will be a real positive. Because I'm sick and tired of watching us and not being able to cheer at least one goal. But there are concerns. Yeah, there's certainly concerns. And this is not about, by the way, sitting here and you know, saying Sean Dyche doesn't deserve time. Of course he does. All those calls to say he's got to go. It's utter nonsense. We're three games into the Premier League season. He deserves to be given the time to create his own side. It appears now, as I say, with Beto on the brink of signing, he's starting to get a squad together with, obviously, the other four signs that have come through the door as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes when the window closes and we've got what we've got and we can see what we've got and players start coming back from injury and become a little bit more settled. I think it'll just take a moment. It'll just take, whether it's a last-minute winner, whether it's just getting our first goal in the league, getting our first win. It'll be something like that which triggers everything, I think. And then once we do that, I think we'll be okay. But obviously, it's always difficult to say, you know, to think that's going to happen after we've lost the first three games of the season.
I think you guys have both answered that question really well, to be fair. And it's just an interesting thought that, you know, what are we trying to do? I was trying to get, are we trying to play through the lines? You know, we're certainly not going to be a possession-based team. We're going to pass teams to death. Is he trying to get it out wide to the fullbacks, to the wingers, to try and put crosses in? You know, it's interesting. And Pete, you made a good point there. And if there's a criticism of Dyche's style, certainly when he was at Burnley, quick switches of play, he was caught out a lot of the time. A lot of the time where, you know, like you said, teams were hugging touch lines and quick switches of play would expose him or his teams. And you know, okay, it's not as if we've been carved open in both those home games and, you know, we've deserved to lose both. You know, in summary, we'd say that there are positives to be taken, you know what I mean? And the fact that, like I said, a little bit cuter in front of goal, you know, just having that little bit more composure, you know, two keepers having the games of their lives, let's be fair, doesn't help either. So sometimes you do need a little bit of luck in that respect. I think if you look at Sofa's score, both keepers got man of the match, didn't they? I think both scored over nine, which is ridiculous in two games. But just to finish here, I don't know whether you saw the stat yesterday, but Wolves' last four Premier League away wins in the Premier League, obviously the last four wins, Everton 1-0, 2021-22 season. Everton lost 2-1, 2022-23 season. They then beat Southampton 2-1 away, 2022-23, and then we lost 1-0 again yesterday. That's their last four Premier League away wins since the 2021-22 season. Three out of the four are Everton, which is absolutely unbelievable. And of those three, we scored one goal. So, you know, that's an incredible stat. That, you know, obviously, we're victim of that stat. But it was almost like the Lopetegui game, his first game, wasn't it, when he came in? And when we lost that 1-0, as I've just referred to, that was a smash and grab. I wouldn't go out and out and say it was a smash and grab yesterday, but it wasn't far from it, was it?
No, you know, you look at last season, Boxing Day, wasn't it? The first game back after the World Cup, and we took the lead in that game and lost it 2-1. And similar, you know, late goal to see us lose the game. And, you know, it had a similar kind of hallmark, a game that Everton were on top in, if you like, for larger periods without being run away with the game. And you know, it's always a concern. You know, a bit of a pattern there, especially against Wolves, a game, you know, which you'd always look back and you know, historically, and think it's a game Everton will win at home. That game, Fulham at home, Everton was that was always Everton's go-to win, wasn't it? We always beat Fulham at home. In recent years, we haven't won. We haven't beaten any of them. But you know, it's a long season. It's a long season, and it's important not to get too catastrophic. But it is difficult when you've lost the first three games of the season, and two of those games you've expected to pick up points, if not win them. But there's a big week ahead. There's an important week ahead. Obviously, transfer deadline day is upon us on Friday. We seem to have a striker who's about to sign on the dotted line as well. You know, second round of the League Cup and also trip to Sheffield United. And we're going to discuss that after this short break. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. And the first thing to pick up on really is the this incoming of our new striker. It seems moved quickly over the last 24 hours or so. Linked with him heavily last year. And talk again this summer early on that we were linked with him again. Went away, as you know, me and Pete and Callum discussed last week. It seems to be that Che Adams was the one who was coming in. A fee had been agreed with Southampton, albeit the structure of the deal wasn't agreed. And as the week went on last week, that sort of seems to not go anywhere. Although he was missing from the Southampton squad yesterday. So that deal, who knows what's going to happen with that, but it appears now Everton have opted to bring in Beto for around about €30 million from Udinese. Quite a price, really. And that appears to be the money that we were going to spend on Willy Nonso, which now that deal's dead in the water. Score for Leeds yesterday as well, just to rub that one in. But we seem to now have, after a long, long search of a couple of years, if not longer, we seem to now got our striker almost through the door. And watching him, I don't know how much the two of you have seen of him, but watching clips, always deceptive, of course. They're not going to put on someone's worst bits, are they? But watching clips of him, goals that he's scored, he's a real physical presence. I think he's 1.94 meters, so I think he's 6'4", big lad, bigger than Dom. Probably similar size, if not a bit bigger than Chimiti. And obviously, he's 25 years of age, so he's that little bit more mature. He's obviously a big physical presence, good in the air. He seems to, all his goals come from a real central area, from being in and around this sort of 6-yard box, 10 yards out. He seems to score a lot of goals in those areas. But looking at him, Lee, do you think he's the right man for this Sean Dyche Everton side?
Well, we've been crying out for someone to back up Dom. And when I say back up Dom, I think, you know, because of his injury record, it will be playing quite a few games if he carries on like he has now. Obviously, he had a freak injury, like I said the other day. So, yeah, hopefully he'll be back, potentially even for the Sheffield United game. But yeah, he looks like, on paper, the number nine that Sean Dyche clearly needs. Like you said, you know, we've paid a lot of money for him, probably overpaid for him. But in today's market nowadays, forwards, A, hard to come by, and B, you know, massively overinflated in terms of price, aren't they? And, you know, for the little money that we've got available to spend, you know, we haven't talked about the collapse of the MSP deal, obviously, in the week, which is just an absolute, you know, travesty yet again. Well, that's another story. But it doesn't appear to, you know, from what we've had conversation with, it doesn't appear to affect our budget going forward for this window. Yeah, as I just said, it just, and I know these deals, you know, if you speak to anyone in the game, these deals don't happen overnight. You know, certainly when you're going to the table with, you know, 15 quid in your pocket trying to negotiate with a team. It's a lot easier to get these deals done when you've got a lot of cash to throw around, as we know. Look, I'm just glad we've got someone in. The last thing I wanted, lads, was us going into the last day of the window again, you know, and then suddenly we're on, like I said last week or the other week, you know, we're on plan, you know, not even B or C or D, it's E, F and G, isn't it? Like Mopé probably was. You know what I mean? And then suddenly we're panic buying. So I'm glad that's done beforehand rather than, you know, not being done on the last day. And then it is, like I said, a panic buy. I've got a funny feeling, Mike, we'll go in. I don't think this Nonto saga is over, if I'm honest. I've just got a funny feeling. I know he's obviously apologised to Farker, and he's apologised to his teammates. And he, of course, typically he scored yesterday. In a thrilling game that they needed to win. But I've just got a feeling we'll go back in. Obviously, he's clearly one of our, if not our main target. And again, are we probably, you know, are they trying to get us to overpay for him? Probably yes, but his ceiling's pretty high. He's only 19. The backups in terms of Sulemana or Sinisterra, I'd have them both, definitely. But clearly, Nonto seems to be the one. As I've been messaging you two in our group all week, I've not slept for the last 3 or 4 days because Mohamed Kudus is going to West Ham by the looks of it. And Mike's shaking his head here. I think this one out of all of them will be the one I will really struggle with, if I'm honest. He scored a hat-trick for Ajax in Europe the other day. He can play out on the right. He can play out on the left. He can play through the middle. He ticks all the boxes. He's quick. He's technical. I'm just fuming that he's going to West Ham. I really am. I just think he's the type of player, lads, that kids will have on their back. Do you know what I mean? And since Richarlison's left, there's not really anyone that does that. You know, he excites you. And I just think the fact we sold Anthony Gordon for a reported figure of 45 million, I know a lot of that money obviously went, you know, well, let's be honest, went to probably towards the running costs in the stadium. To think that we could have done a straight swap for someone like him of his quality and still made a little profit just shows you how bad we're badly run, doesn't it? And I know I've gone a bit off piece there, Mike, but I just think, I'm just glad, like I said, overall we've got someone in and we're not waiting until the last gate or last day of the window and it's like, you know, let's be honest, wacky races like it always is.
Well, it all depends how long the medical takes, really, doesn't it? You know, we're sitting here on Sunday. There's 5 days, you know, whatever they're like. So as we always believe, until we see a photograph of them with the shirt on, sitting in the that mock up stand at Finch Farm, then don't believe it. But obviously he's here. He's undergoing a medical. He has agreed terms. I think I saw somewhere this morning he's on about $4,000 a week at Udinese. So no wonder he's happy to come over here. We probably give him about 75-80 grand a week. But Pete, happy that we seem to finally have come to the end of our striker search. Somebody, I said this yesterday to someone, it's not about bringing in someone even now as backup for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. It's about bringing in somebody to provide competition and to say to Dominic Calvert-Lewin, even if you're fit 100%, you're not guaranteed to start.
Well, I hope that's the case because it would mean two things. One, we've got a fitter, more sustainable Calvert-Lewin that we're going to get more football out of, and hopefully it's not the kind of management of his career given his injury profile. And two, we'll get a better Dominic Calvert-Lewin because of it. Because he'll have to perform to be in the side, and that kind of competition can only be healthy. It also gives Dyche additional options, doesn't it? We've not seen a 4-4-2 under him yet, and I'm not necessarily clamouring for that, but it's good to have that adaptability, isn't it? If and when it's needed, you know, the potentially either Beto and Calvert-Lewin or Chimity could be up top for us. But his profile's interesting. Like you say, you've always got to have the YouTube disclaimer and the stat disclaimer, but you look at his aggregated statistics over the past year, and where he seems to excel actually is in his initial pressing and defensive work rate. So he's I think he's in the kind of the top two thirds of all strikers across the kind of five top leagues for initial clearances, blocks, interceptions at the top of the pitch. He's got a good defensive work rate as well. He seems to be quick. Very, very direct. His XG, not counting penalties, and his XG for assists as well, is also in the top two thirds of all strikers across the top five leagues. So I don't think he's going to come in and, you know, score 15, 20 plus goals for us. But I think looking at his profile, hopefully he can come in and give us a focal point and balance and, you know, be clinical enough to be effective for us. I was quite surprised by the fee, you know, I think given his profile, because he seems to have, his football career seems to have picked up a little bit later in terms of, you know, in terms of his development compared to other players. So other than playing in the Italian league, he doesn't have a lot of experience, I guess, playing very, very top level football. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. But the players apparently most similar to him, if you know, if you believe these statistical software packages, number two on that list is Ollie Watkins, and number seven on that list is Ivan Toney. So I'm not saying that we should be expecting some kind of wonderful combination of those two players, but if that's the kind of profile, that's the kind of company that he's keeping in terms of his performance data, I don't think that's a bad thing at all for Everton. So, you know, let's hope he can be as successful as possible. And am I right in thinking his first name's Norberto? So is it Norberto Beto? Have I got that right? Nobby Beto?
You know more than me, Pete, right there. Let me check that one out. I'll check Wikipedia.
With a name like that, it is,
yeah. Norberto. Yeah, Norberto is his first name. Yeah.
Nobby Beto.
Yeah.
The last Nobby we had in the Premier League was a half decent player, wasn't he?
Solano, yeah, not a bad player. But listen, I don't care what he's called, as long as he scores a few goals and we win a few games. That's the important thing. But let's hope he hits the ground running anyway, assuming the signing happens. We just never know, do we? But let's hope he can come in. Maybe we'll see him Wednesday against Doncaster. Obviously, that is being televised. Looking for a cup upset. Doncaster currently bottom of the Football League. Means nothing, though, when Everton are in town. But maybe a chance, like we said earlier on, to see a few of the, say, fringe players. All the fringe players have been involved, haven't they? Because we've got that many injuries, but you might see a few changes. You know, Jarvis Junior will probably come in goal. Maybe you'll see Michael Keane come back on the side, Ben Godfrey, Mikhailenko. So players who've not had many minutes. But again, for me, don't make too many changes. I think it's really important to Everton now get a win from somewhere, because whether it's in the League Cup, whether it's in the Premier League, it just helps with that confidence, especially before we go to Bramall Lane in a game against two sides without any points. Obviously, Sheffield United play Manchester City today. So we'll wait to see what happens there. He just announced the signing of Cameron Archer as well from Aston Villa. Tom Davis is obviously at Sheffield United as well. We know where that one goes. And then we've got the chance for deadline day as well in the mix. But without going into too much detail, I'll ask the both of you. What are you hoping for in terms of our remaining deals? There's talk this morning to migrate it off to Saudi Arabia for around £12 million. Pretty much done. So we'll wait and see for that one to be announced. In terms of incomings and outgoings, what are your expectations, Lee? Where do you think we need to strengthen before the window closes?
Well, for me, there's two, possibly three. So we definitely need a right winger. I think that's paramount. You know, like I said, the players we've been linked with recently would suggest that, you know, the likes of Sulemana plays out there, doesn't he, with a loan, with an option to buy potentially. Like I said before, I still think there's something in this Nonto deal. I don't think the club will walk away easily from it. Whether that happens or not, we don't know. Leeds have been very difficult to work with. We've also been linked with his teammate, Sinisterra, who I like as well. I'd take any of those three right now. I think they improve us. Obviously, we've signed the forward now. Hopefully, after today, we'll have signed him. I still think we need another centre-half. Mason Holgate's obviously gone off to Southampton. You know, they've just taken in over 100 million in fees. But, you know, we'll do your loan deal and we'll pay off his wages for your boys. Yeah, great negotiation there, but that's another story. But I do think we need, obviously, another centre-half in there. If we can, I expect us to maybe strengthen in that area. And like I said, I still think we need an out-and-out number six. a disciplined six who just sits there, like I said, and puts out fires and keeps it ticking over and protects that back four, because Garner is not a natural six. You know, he's very good at pressing. He's very good at, you know, at tackling. You know, he's not a bad footballer whatsoever. But like I said, he's not very disciplined in his positional sense. And like Pete alluded to before, you know, at times Onana, for me, considering how well he was playing in pre-season, just hasn't grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck, has he? And as a result, we do look easier to play against. So, like I said, two, possibly three. I mean, the three would be ideal. And also, I think we should be shipping the likes of Mope out and people like that as well. You know, I want to see. I think Tom Cannon will end up going to Preston on loan, as we think. But I want to see the likes of Dobbin and Chimiti getting in the team ahead of Neil Mope for starters.
Well, yeah, maybe so. You know, Lewis Dobbin gave a decent account of himself against a very, very, very good fullback in Semedo, by the way. Difficult opposition to go up against, obviously, for your first start. And, you know, he was full of energy. He was positive. He tried to make things happen. Sometimes didn't come off. But listen, he had a real go. Defensively, he didn't neglect his duties there either. So I think, you know, more and more that we've listened to the manager praise him, and he praised him again in the press conference before the game as well. And the fact that he's used him from the start, the more and more that you think that we might see a little bit more of him. It all depends who comes in, of course, because we're awash in terms of why players, especially on the left-hand side, aren't we? But we need to address the right-hand side, because obviously Alex Iwobi tends to play there, not really a right winger, but plays there. But we need to look at that. The Maigret, as I say, on his way. So right wing, most definitely. I can't believe, and I know what your thoughts are, Pete, on this. I can't believe there's been no real solid links to a centre half. I just can't get over the fact that the manager is happy to go into the rest of the season with the four centre halves we've got, when you've got a pretty solid one in James Tarkowski. You've got Jared Brandspace, who you thought played well yesterday, but he's still fairly unknown in the Premier League. Had a semi-decent season at PSV. But, you know, we don't know how he's going to acquit himself over the course of a full Premier League season. And then you've got the players behind him as we speak now. And Michael Keane, who we know what Michael Keane's like in terms of his mental state and when he makes mistakes, which we've seen already this season, how that impacts him. And obviously Ben Godfrey, who never really, for me, played particularly well in a back two. So are you expecting to see some centre half links, Peter, or do you think the manager's just going to say, oh yeah, we'll go with what we've got?
I think it's a reflection of the reality of the financial situation we're in, sadly. I would be absolutely shocked. I'll fall off my chair if we sign another centre half, because I think he's either been told or the club have made a decision now that this is the two in each position. So, you know, left back, you've got Ashley Young, Mikulenko, and then you've got your four centre halves, haven't you? Tarkowski, Branthwaite, Godfrey Keane, and then at right back you've got Coleman and Patterson. And I think that's the season. I think that's going to be the structure for the season. I think I'd be really surprised if we sign a right winger, and I think it'd probably have to be a loan or you know, a really typically Everton structured deal. But I think we desperately need it for balance, you know, and whether he kind of readjusts one of the players that maybe more naturally plays on the left, because we seem to be overloaded on that left side, don't we? You know, that Harrison can play centrally or favours the left. Dwight McNeil, Dan Juma favours the left. Dobbin favours the left. So can one of those start to do more for us on the right-hand side? I'm not sure. But, you know, I would just be thrilled if we get the centre forward over the line, because that's the big one. If we can get Beto nailed down and confirmed today, fantastic. I'd be absolutely shocked if we do anything defensively. But I completely agree with you both. I think that kind of centre midfield, I think unless Onana goes, I don't think there will be any additional players other than a well-structured right side midfield player. So maybe that could throw a bit of a curveball in. If Onana is out the door, is pushing for a move, if he goes for the right money, can we do something in one of those other positions? Maybe that's where we'll find ourselves over the week. Be interesting.
Well, yeah. Hopefully, it's busy because we still need to address certain issues. I still just can't believe we're not going to get another centre half in personally. And I think that would be very, very negligent for us not to do so. Obviously, we'll be good to see another wide player come in, as I say, in terms of balance on that right hand side. It'd be good to see a few more players out the door, whether that be the likes of Neil Mopey, Andre Gomez, Gabaman. Anyone know where Gabaman actually is? Because no one's seen him about the past 6 months. But we need to be making sure we get people out the door as well, and making sure that the players that come in can come in and hit the ground running, make sure that we're a better outfit from the off, and give the manager the tools to work with to make us a more competitive side.
Another thing I'd say as well, I watched a bit of West Ham yesterday in patches, and you know, whilst your midfield needs to be solid, I think we also lack that little bit of creativity, mate, as well. Do you know what I mean? I know Dan Gimo was brought in to play off the left. I'd like to see him potentially. I know Decore played pretty well yesterday, but he's not creative, is he? I know he's got a goal in him, although. You know, he's a bit unlucky yesterday, just a fraction offside, and you know, he needs a bit more composure for me. He's still in front of goal. I think he'd score a lot more if he was a lot more composed in front of goal rather than looking like, you know, everything was 100 mile an hour. But I would like to look at Dan Gimo playing behind, you know, Beto or Calvert-Lewin or even Chimiti. Do you know what I mean? Just someone who's got that ability just to create something in you know, at the tip of a three in midfield. Because it, if you look at that three in midfield we've played all season so far in obviously, you know, Onana, Garner and Decore, there's not a lot of creativity in there, is there? I don't look at any of those players and think you're going to play a perfectly slide rule pass here or a pass that no one sees or a little bit of skill and get a shot off. Do you know what I mean? So we have, whilst we've been crying out for a forward, We need to spread the goals across the team. You know what I mean? We really do. It can't just purely come from, okay, we're signed a number nine now. So, he's got to score all the goals. The midfield have got to come in and chip in with some goals as well. And when I say chip in with some goals, I want to see, you know, potentially a midfielder who can get us double figures plus. You know what I mean? And That's key as well. All well and good asking your forwards to put the ball in the back of the net, but we also need a bit of creativity in midfield as well as a goal threat for me. And maybe we'll see something now, maybe not. But I do think that needs. I mean, look, we can't address everything in one window, but I do think, you know, that needs to be looked at.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And there's been calls for maybe seeing Dwight McNeil drop into that number 10 position. We know he's creative. We know technically he's probably one of our better players, of course, of the second half of last season. I mean, missing massively at this moment in time for his delivery alone. So just being calls for that, Alex Iwobi.
And he likes a shot.
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, he'll shoot from distance, no problem. So maybe that's an option. Maybe we look at moving a midfielder out in the last sort of 4 or 5 days of the window and look to bring in a little bit of creativity. James Garner in there is also potentially an option as well. You know, so there are options there. But I think for Everton to have options, we've got to have the players back that are currently injured because. As we said earlier on, we keep on saying we're just trying to fit players in where we can at this moment in time, and it's impacting the balance. But interesting to see, you know, when we rock up at Bramall Lane on Saturday, who's available, who's signed, and how different the squad looks compared to this weekend. But just briefly on that game, obviously it's still early season. It'll be the fourth game of the season. They were a side that were picked to struggle. We're certainly a side that are being picked to struggle. Mentioned Tom Davis, Cameron Arce has just been announced as well. Bramall Lane's always been quite a lively place to go from memory. Very passionate fans, obviously back in the Premier League after a number of years out. What are your thoughts on that game, Lee, in terms of, I mean, we've got to get something from it, haven't we? Let's get it right. We've got to get the ball rolling in terms of points. But what would you expect Everton to go there and take the game to a side like Sheffield United, or would you expect us to go there and do what we did so well at Brighton last season and sort of sit in and just look to counter?
It's a very good question, mate. It's a dilemma that Dyche has got, because we need to pick up points. And at the moment, let's be honest, as morbid as it sounds, you know, getting a point will be something. Although, you know, the way they've started the season, they don't look like a Premier League team for me. Them and Luton, you know, in our fortune, by the way, that they will look like they'll both struggle this season. I haven't seen enough of Burnley yet. Only played one game, haven't they? So it's hard to tell. But I do agree with you. I do think the game's there to be won, and that's mad saying that when we, you know, we're sitting on no points without scoring. But you know, like I said, this cup game couldn't come at a better time for us, and a chance to try and get a few goals and go into that, you know, bounce into that game with a bit more confidence. Sheffield United, I believe, playing City today, aren't they? So yeah. You know, that could be on our favour as well. I can't see City slipping up there, if I'm honest. You know, the way City have been playing, the way they've started the season again, they've started really strong, and you know, they could go there and well, you know, score five or six against any team, let's be fair, Man City, but you know, certainly against a team that I would say right now aren't really Premier League standard in Sheffield United. So that could be in our favour as well. But yeah, it's one of those, mate. It's a favourable fixture, like we said. Fulham at home and Wolves at home were as well, and I expect Wolves to be down there still, unless they do something miraculous in the window. They've been limited in terms of their spend. I expect Fulham will probably be more around about mid-table, if I'm honest. I don't expect them to be down there, but they look a much stronger team with Paulinho fit, although they have lost some key players as well. And I certainly, like I said, expect Sheffield United to be down there. So, you know, we've got to try and salvage something, because we have the international break where we'll have players back. But then first game back is Arsenal, isn't it? And, you know, we cannot be bouncing into that Arsenal game on no points. We just can't. You know, it's implausible to think we could be on no points potentially bouncing into that Arsenal game. And then potentially being on none after five, which would be catastrophic, you know. And this is the problem right now, and we said it, didn't we, going into the season. It's so important to try and get off to a good start, because it just takes the pressure off everything, you know. And like you've used the phrase quite a bit recently, and I think quite a few fans have. You want to enjoy going the game, and that's what it's all about. Football's about enjoyment. Yes, we take it seriously because we love the football club, but it's about enjoyment fundamentally, isn't it? You know, we've been going since we were kids. We love the place, we love the team. And for me, it's that comes above everything. And if we can start winning games, we'll start enjoying it again.
Yeah, I mean, we all thought yesterday, you know, a win makes a massive amount of difference, especially at this stage of the season. You know, given the fact that the MSP capital deal collapsed, as much as we've, you know, they're still given a £100 million loan for the stadium, but that collapsed. That had a negative impact on obviously the mood in and around the fan base. The fact that obviously the chairman is still going to be there, there'll be no more changes at boardroom level currently. This 777 appears to be back on the scene, which is something that we don't want, looking at their past history in terms of when they've invested in football clubs. So there's a lot of negativity around that. Obviously, the fact that no more players were coming through the door. We were, as I say, the Che Adams deal seemed to be really close. That faded away. So we went into another weekend without a striker.
On that point, Mike, do you think Beto would... The reason I said this earlier in the week, do you think the reason Che Adams, by all accounts, it was pretty much a done deal after the game last week, and the player was obviously, you know, purported to be, potentially coming down for his medical at one point. Do you think that we got another sniff in terms of Beto being old on? Beto could be a goer here, and we ditched Che Adams. Do you think that's what it was?
I think Everton want to bring in two strikers, to be honest.
Yeah.
I still think they want to bring in two strikers. Now, whether that means that we do get Che Adams as well, I don't know. I think also as well, Southampton sort of moved the goalposts again, and Everton were bartering over this down payment. That's what the reports were. because we know we can go to European sides and they're more open to this lower down payment. So why would you go and give Southampton maybe £5 or £6 million as a down payment when you can go and give less than that to Udinese for potentially a better striker with a better profile, possibly? But I still think Everton are going to hunt for maybe two strikers. And that suggests then that Neil Mopé will probably leave. And then you leave yourself then with a young lad in Chimiti, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Beto, and potentially one more, because there's been links to Danny Ings this morning. So I don't know how true that is either. So I think the club feel that maybe they can get someone else in as well. We don't want to be awash with them, of course. You know, we're going to go from one extreme to the other. But I'm not sure that that deal totally hinged on obviously us sort of getting more positive vibes from Udinese around Beto. But who knows? You know, Everton have got their fingers in many pies. We're looking at numerous players. We've got to be careful with the finances. And they'll try and do what they can. I just think that after Beto, we'll probably see maybe a couple of loan deals come through the door, because obviously we've still got a couple of spaces in terms of our loans, haven't we? Was a one European loan and one more domestic loan allowed? So I expect Everton to try and utilise those two spots. To be honest with you,
I do think Mopé will go if we get another forward in and. You know, let's be honest, it's not worked out for him. It's not worked out for both parties, has it? So I do expect him to go. Hopefully we can get a reasonable fee for him. You know, I was saying to you boys, I'm very surprised there hasn't been stronger links with us with Iheanacho or Patson Daka. Looks like both of those two guys may be off to other Premier League clubs. But that comes down to maybe what you're saying, Mike. I think we've made inquiries about those players. There are reports to say we have, but maybe your point there of them wanting, you know, bigger amounts of money up front, and you know, we haven't got that liquidity to be able to do it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Daka's been like, is it Bournemouth for 25 million? Everton, we're not going to pay £25 million for Daka. There's just no way. And I've said it time and time again. Everton are going to be looking at the African Cup of Nations in January and what players are going to lose, and. That will impact, I think, in terms of who they're looking at. You know, like Iheanacho and players who potentially could be going off to the African Cup of Nations. Everton might think, well, we can't afford to lose a player for, say, 3 or 4 matches there. So we're already going to be losing a few as it is. So maybe that's also in the thinking as well with certain players. But Pete, I know we lost you there briefly there because you had a dog emergency. Totally understandable. But in terms of the Sheffield United game, just very, very briefly, what importance do you attach to that? Because given the fact we've got an international break, Arsenal immediately after the international break, how important is it for Everton to pick something up so we're not going into that game with no points at all?
Well, in a way, I almost don't want to answer it, because we were talking last week about the implications of the Wolves game if that didn't go our way, and the pressure that would invite, and it's just getting bigger and bigger, isn't it? Because like you say, we've got the international break after, and we could potentially be in a position where, you know, we've lost our first four games, haven't scored a goal, and are rooted bottom to the table. And then I've 2 weeks where we can't do anything about it. And then I think we come back in against, is it Arsenal? So look, it's a huge game. It's potentially a season-defining game, and I can't believe I'm saying that after three matches. But I think as well, it's a big game for Sean Dyche, because this is probably the first time that any real serious pressure is maybe starting to be put on his shoulders. I think the position that he was in last season and what he inherited, even if we went down, I don't think anybody would have attack Sean Dyche or attributed it too strongly to Sean Dyche. But I think this season it's different, and we don't look good. So it's a huge, huge game, and I just hope we go into it with more balance, and hopefully Chimiti or maybe even Beto could start the game and you know, give us more balance from the start, and we might have a bit more balance left and right, whether it's Dobbin and Danjuma or Iwobi might be ready to kind of come back in. I don't know, but it's massive. And if I'm going to try and find a positive, maybe the one positive for us is, in a weird way, it's not a Goodison Park, maybe it'll suit us better to go away and have a bit less, little bit less pressure on us, and try and put pressure on Sheffield United as the home side. But I'm not looking forward to it at all, and it's a game that I think I'm going to miss. I'm not going to be able to see the game, and Lee's not going to be able to see it either. So normally, what happens when I miss a game is we win about 3 or 4 nil, and something amazing happens. So let's hope it's a good omen.
Well, we're all away, aren't we? You two are off on a stag do. I'm over in Gran Canaria, so maybe that's a bonus that we're all out of the country, and Everton might do something. I'll be watching from a bar somewhere, of course, with a nice slimline tonic with a slice of lemon, like Audrey Roberts, but without the gin. So hopefully we will have better fortunes at Sheffield United. But let's round off. Long show today, obviously. Lots to talk about. That's Everton, unfortunately. There's moments in time. We'll go back to our predictions. Pete called for them to come back. He was disgusted to took them out. Pete, prediction, Sheffield United.
Big 1-0. Decore.
Late.
I was about to say then, you're going to say, like, yeah, you're going to sit there like James Bond having a Negroni or something. You said, like, Audrey Roberts having a slimline tonic.
Yeah, I'm more like Audrey Roberts than Daniel Craig, believe me.
It couldn't get any more opposite, could it? A lot of it hinges on the game in the week. If we can get a result there, like I said, and score a few goals, I think we go into that game with a bit more confidence. I'd be interested to see how Sheffield United get on today against City. It could be a massacre, but no, in Everton or something, they'll probably nick a 1-0 or something like that, and City will have one of those weird off days they sometimes have. I'm going to say 1-1. I'm going to say 1-1 because I just think, I think Sheffield United will be looking at us as a wounded animal right now and thinking they can get their first win in the Premier League.
I'm going to say 3-1 Everton. I've just got a real positive feeling. I think this week will be a good week, and I think we all deserve a good week, to be honest with you. But I think it'll be a good week in terms of the cup game. We'll get through. Maybe it won't be straightforward by any means, but I think we'll come through the game and we'll get through to the next round. I think we'll end the window pretty strongly with outgoings and also incomings that we need. We better get a centre half, and I tell you right now, don't get a centre half, I won't be able to sleep at night, I've got to be honest. And then Saturday we'll finish off the week with a win. So that's me being ultra positive, of course, but I've got a good feeling for the first time this season. So let's see how it plays out. But that's us for this week. No show next Sunday. Obviously, we're all away. We will get something out the following week, of course. It's international break, so we'll look back on the Doncaster games and the Sheffield United game, and also the end of the transfer window as well, and see what Everton could do. So keep an eye out for that across, obviously, social media, across all your podcast platforms as well. Make sure that you do give us a rating as well. Like, comments, things like that. It helps obviously the show grow. And we will catch you very, very soon.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.